Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, live from Ben Golliver's kitchen table. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I can't lie. I tried to pull out all the stops for you. I personally made you a hand batch of Benegrino sparkling water. I ordered you tacos. I had peanut butter on hand. You politely declined. I can understand why you wouldn't want to eat my peanut butter tacos. I gave you the 2-minute full tour of Playa del Golliver, as you like to call it. It's good to have you here. We're going to try to do this in person. I'm not sure how well it's going to work, to be honest.
It's great to be here. I will also add that we watched a combined like 5 to 10 minutes of Cavs Celtics tonight, which is about all it deserved.
I watched a little more.
Of course. And I'm with you. It's funny, like, podcasting actually feels a lot more pathetic when it's just two people hanging out to talk for an hour and a half.
When it's two people hoping that the person doing laundry next door will kind of quiet down and the dogs that are barking outside will just shut up and go to bed. Yeah, it does feel a lot worse.
Yeah. Well, so we've got a bunch of questions to get to. I do want to mention a couple things about being here in your home.
Okay.
Number one, it's a great apartment here. I'm pretty surprised that the walls are not covered with DeMar DeRozan shot charts like Matthew McConaughey in True Detective.
Yeah, you're slightly less of a serial killer than I thought you'd be.
This is a great place. Loving life right now. Second of all, I did not realize that you started draftkevindurant.blogspot.com. You have a framed copy of your first mention in print, which is crediting you with that blog, which I loved when we were in college.
That was my claim to fame. I started it on the night of the draft lottery. I came home from work early for my day job, all excited because they were going to do the draft lottery like I do every year. Lo and behold, the Blazers win the pick, and I realized this is a life-changing moment. For whatever reason, I don't ever watch a lot of college basketball, didn't watch a lot of college basketball at that time, but I just kind of had a feeling about KD, and yeah. I was like, all right, this is the guy. And as I've mentioned to you, I'm a lifelong Michigan football fan, and Greg Oden being an Ohio State guy was just
was
enough to push me over the top. Ironically, the injury stuff with Oden at that point wasn't nearly as big of a deal.
You just loved KD.
Yeah, and it just became more the injury curse narrative of like Bill Walton, Greg Oden, all that stuff started immediately after he was drafted when he was like missed his whole rookie year because he was allegedly dance revolutioning and like somehow screwed up a ligament.
Just a really dark period in Portland.
Yeah. But so I started at the night of the draft. I immediately like emailed the Blazers season ticket people, their staff, and was like, hey, I made this website. And they were like, first of all, they had no fans at the time. So they were just like flooded with calls from all these different people. But I immediately like heard back from them. And I was like, wow, I might actually be onto something here. Like this could turn into a thing.
It was definitely a thing. First of all, it's not online anymore, sadly. But for OG basketball nerds, I think most people would remember Draft Kevin Durant. And the other thing that I wanted to add is, so you have it framed because that was your first time in print. And my first time in print was an article about Kevin Durant my junior year at Boston College. I was too lazy to join the school paper, but I did just write like an 800-word thing about KD that I emailed them and was like, hey, like Kevin Durant's amazing. Do you want to publish this? And they published it. And so I have a saved little like byline in the Boston College student paper. And
now here we are. And I've got to tell you that Kevin Durant selling out to join the Warriors and winning the title isn't actually the worst thing that's ever happened to the world.
So no, the point is that we were destined to host the podcast together.
Well,
okay?
I have actually thought, though, because this is the 10-year anniversary of that draft, right? Uh-huh. So like there is this little full circle vibe. Like if he wins the title here in year 10, it's like 2007, he starts it. I launched my career 2017. Potentially, I'm going to cover his first championship. Did I expect it to kind of go down like this where he's like, sort of like the most nice and hated person simultaneously? It's a little weird.
Yeah, where it's not quite as cool.
Well, let me point out, though, why I framed that article. You get on me about the told you so stuff every once in a while because I do have that tendency. I try not to gloat. I'm sensitive to being called out for gloating. But in this article, they have me quoted, discussing my reasons why I thought Durant was a better prospect and below that, they have letters to the editor. And one of the letters to the editor, the headline says, "Even Caveman Knows Draft Odin." And it was like, I was the idiot in Portland at yeah. that time, because they did a poll. It was like 90%+ in favor of Odin. I had, like, as I told you earlier today, I had convinced myself they were going to listen to me and take Durant, even though everyone knew they were going to take Odin the whole time. I was devastated when they took Odin. And that's just the ultimate told you so, though. It's like,
it really is.
It's like, even cavemen know draft Odin.
I think one of the sentences was draft Odin, draft Odin, draft Odin. Yes. A great letter to the editor. Yeah. And the only other thing I need to mention is that you took me inside your video ripping process.
I did.
I've had like 6 or 7 people ask me how you rip the videos of the press conferences so quickly. And I now know. You explained it and we're like, yeah, see, it's really easy. And I had to be honest, like, it makes no sense to me. It involves several different screens. It was really complicated, but you can do it in like 30 seconds.
It was not complicated. And just like Pop and RC Buford had a gun to my head for the last podcast, everybody was a little worried about how pro Spurs I was. I might have been under a little bit of duress from them. I've got you under duress right now. You are sworn to secrecy. You're not going to reveal how I did it. Maybe you couldn't even if you wanted to.
Yeah, I could not explain how you did it. So don't worry about it. But anyways, with that out of the way, let's hang out and answer some questions here. Because first of all, we've saved a handful of Warriors and Cavs specific questions for a finals preview that we will do next Tuesday. But for now, let's just sort of hop all over the map. Our first question here is from Eden. And he says, "Hey guys, big fan of the pod. I'm listening on a train in Italy while on vacation. So, question for you. All you media guys complain about the media having influence over player contracts via NBA voting, but aren't you guys super qualified to decide who the best players are? I trust you guys over everybody else to vote for the All-Stars. Shouldn't the same apply to all NBA?"
So my problem is not with the media side of it. My mm-hmm. problem is with them, the way they structured this whole designated veteran thing. I mean, that to me, the problem was how they're incentivizing these supermax contracts. I think the media should vote on everything. We saw what the players did to the All-Star voting. That was an absolute disaster. I think that there's too small of a sample when you only allow the GMs or the presidents to vote.
Uh-huh.
So if they can't vote, and the players can't vote. Personally, I know I put a ton into my vote. I mean, hours and hours. We debate it on these podcasts over the course of months. And I think that is actually closer to the rule rather than the exception. I think most people who are voting take it pretty seriously.
Yeah, I was going to say, Eden makes a good point. And we should also add that 10 to 15 years ago, the media could have definitely made some pretty rough mistakes. I think now basketball media is so paranoid about being called out.
For sure.
I mean, it's all public and everybody's so stats oriented that generally people get the right answer.
Well, see, look, if you're lazy 15 years ago, you just watch the team that you cover, you vote for all of them. And then the guys who have really good games against your team that you're watching. But if you're lazy today, you just read one of 35 columns written by somebody who isn't lazy in terms of their voting. I publish my awards columns 3-4 times a year. Yeah. Other people do that as well. So if all you want to do is like take the shortest cut possible, just Google most improved player. You're going to have 10 articles you can read telling you who to vote for. So I think that the danger of the current system is a small number of influential voters who have large followings can really sway the vote. You know, like we've seen that with certain defensive player of the year candidates in the past. We've seen that with the narrative around the MVP race. You know, it does tend to, I think, kind of coagulate like real quickly altogether. But
yeah.
I still think that's way better than what it was 15 years ago. And it's way better than guys voting for all of their teammates for the freaking All-Star game. Like we saw, you know, all the Blazers and the Lakers were voting for each other. I mean, it's stupid.
That was actually one of the most interesting aspects. First of all, we're not getting back into an MVP argument here. Someone last time hit us up and we're like, you guys need an MVP argument swear jar, which is dead on. So I'm not going to let that happen. But it is true that there is a hive mind of basketball media. And that was the fascinating aspect of the MVP argument, is that the hive mind was fractured for like one of the first times in the last few years where there were legitimate disagreements across like the quote unquote smart media. But the reason I put this question first is because I was on the radio this week and they were asking about the landscape with regard to the CBA. And basically I said that the Warriors were sort of a one-time perfect storm situation, and that the way the league is structured is actually the right way to structure it. And this was just sort of the mistake would be overreacting and doing everything you can to prevent this from happening again. As soon as I finished saying that, I realized that they basically did that with the CBA already. Yeah. And we now have these designated player exceptions. And
they already overreacted, you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. They've already overreacted. And the more I look at these, like in every single scenario, the designated player exception is kind of satisfying no one. I mean, certain players are going to make a lot more money because of it. But you look at teams like the Celtics and teams like the Wizards, like they're now potentially hamstrung by the fact that they have to give $200 million to John Wall and Isaiah Thomas. And like that doesn't really help them. And then
it's really cool competitive balance for the teams that have one star. They can all pay their guy and like he's the face of the franchise. But that doesn't erase the fact that Golden State's got four of those.
Exactly.
And Cleveland's got three of them. Look, it's not great. What we're learning this season, I think, and what we're probably going to learn here over the next couple of weeks is that the difference between a big three and a big four is exponential, right?
Yeah.
Like if you have a big three, there was still hope for teams going against Miami. Like the Heatles were a big deal. They were awesome. They did not run over the league straight for 4 years.
Well, and I also think that it's healthy to have super teams. Like you need three or four great teams. I think that's when the NBA is in the best shape.
But I think the problem is when you've got four all-stars, other than just three all-stars and role players, when you've got four all-stars in the same starting lineup, two of them are MVP candidates, that bar is just so high, even for other really, really good teams and even for the best-run organizations. I mean, I was kind of taken aback by the level of resignation from the Spurs, especially after when Kawhi went down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, Pop, he went into his bag of tricks for sure, but he came up pretty empty. And like Manu Ginobili after game three was like repeatedly said, well, you know, if they beat us in game four, we're just going to have to go out there and shake their hands and say, you're an incredible team. And it's like, this is not a quitter. This is not a loser. This is not some guy who's used to 10 straight years of lotteries. This is a freaking San Antonio Spurs legend basically saying, look, we're going to get killed in game four.
Yeah.
And they got killed in game four. I think the designated player thing, it's kind of broken multiple ways because one, theoretically, it does lock those guys in there. And then it limits those teams' ability to build around them.
Yeah.
But it also, for the fringe guys like Paul George and Gordon Hayward, the guys who didn't quite qualify, that now encourages them, incentivizes them to go join a super team.
That's the thing. It's going to be really interesting. I'm curious to see how many situations this actually works in. I guess it will probably
work.
We're
waiting for our first.
Yeah, I guess it'll maybe work for Steph Curry, you know?
Yeah.
But like, it's because Utah wants to pay Gordon Hayward $200 million. I think as I thought through it earlier, the way you could potentially make it work would be to say, all right, so Washington now has a competitive advantage. This is all born of my anxiety regarding Wall Supermax. But the way you could do it is say, like, Washington and Boston have an advantage in signing Isaiah and Wall.
Yeah.
But they, like, that contract will count as a normal max salary. And the money that they go over to sign those guys won't count against the cap. But I guess they didn't do that because owners of those teams don't want to have to pay an extra $25 million in salary.
Yeah.
I mean,
the rich are going to get richer. Cause here's the worst part about what you're saying. Let's say Steph cashes out Mac super max. Let's say KD cashes out every dollar he can get. Let's say Draymond comes along as a free agent. He decides, look, I'm playing hardball. I'm pulling what LeBron did when he went back to Cleveland. I want every dollar you can give me. Okay. Let's say Clay says the same thing. Is there any ownership group or franchise that's going to be able to look at four all-stars all in their primes, all wanting max monies and be able to say, sure, okay, we'll pay you. Golden State, that's the team. Like their owners who are moving into this ridiculous new palace of a stadium in San Francisco in the middle of the Tech Valley bubble. Like, are these guys going to get broken up because of money? No. The teams that are going to be struggling, this is why the rich are getting richer. The teams that are going to get struggling are you know, Ted Leonsis, where he's like, well, I'm paying John like 35 yeah. and we're still only winning 50 games. And now you're telling me I have to pay Otto a max. Now you're telling me I got to pay this other guy max. You know, we're just going to have to get by with,
yeah.
you know, Brandon Jennings as our backup point guard on the minimum. And we're going to have to skimp somewhere. Right. And so,
one of the reasons Sacramento pulled the plug on Boogie, which was healthy for everyone involved. Yeah. But one of those reasons was that, look, they sat there and said, we do not need to commit $200 million to this player. Like, we know that he keeps us relevant, but that is just, if it's too insane for Vivek, like, yeah. it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, what's really crazy about this whole situation is, like, I was doing the brainstorm thing. How do we fix this? Well, they did just lock in the CBA rules, right? So it's not like Adam Silver can just show up on game one of the finals for his press conference and be like, guess what? I'm changing the rules. Like, this is screwed up. I'm trying to throw everybody a bone. Like, that is not going to fly. Everybody just agreed to it, right? So I was thinking, like, these guys might actually have to go, like, a completely alternate route and just be like, well, you know how we've always had only like two games between the Eastern and Western Conference teams. We're now doing like baseball style interleague play where we're going to just have the Warriors and Cavs play like 14 times during the regular season. Like, they might, like, seriously, they're going to need to consider like all sorts of weird little things around the edges to get around this problem, because Cleveland's not going anywhere. Golden State's not going anywhere. This could be the third straight finals for the first time ever between the same two teams. And it could go on to be the fourth and the fifth and the sixth.
Well, yeah. And to be clear, though, that's not exactly what I'm worried about. Yeah. I just want to make sure that we have future stacked teams.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how possible that's going to be if one guy gets truly great players are locked up for that much money. So yeah. I think there's going to be enough hand-wringing over competitive balance over the next few weeks that we don't need to, like, go too hard on the state of the league now, but it's
looming.
Yeah.
And it's weird, because, like, and I don't bring my parents up hardly ever, I think, on this podcast, because they're very casual basketball fans. Like, my dad will watch, my mom, you know, she could probably name 10 people in the league. She's like, oh, really? It's Golden State in Cleveland again? You know? And it's like, at some point, those people are just like, yeah, I've seen this show before.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a backlash. It's not going to happen yet. I don't think it's going to happen for this finals. But it's kind of looming. And if you're Silver, you're stressing about this.
Not only that, it should be noted that I really think that the NBA's new CBA made it worse.
Yes.
So,
no, I think it's a great point.
All right. So you had a question that you asked me in the living room, and I said we could save it for the pod.
So we walked 5 feet over to the table, set up the microphone, and
just
now we're
talking.
Just
living the dream here out in L.A.
Okay. My question was this. Pick your favorite second-tier team in the league in terms of who has the chance to be the next power.
Uh-huh.
Boston, San Antonio, whoever you want to pick besides Cleveland and Golden State. Give that team a dream summer. So, like, for Boston, I'm going to say you're drafting Markelle Fultz, you're signing Gordon Hayward, and you're trading for Paul George. For San Antonio, I'm saying you're getting your key guys back on budget contracts, you're trading LaMarcus Aldridge for a nice package, and you're getting Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Whatever that dream scenario is there any team in the league you can give them their dream summer this offseason to get us to a point that there's a more competitive conference finals next year in either the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference? Or is the gap so wide that these current super teams are still better than your dream Celtics or your dream Spurs or your dream Clippers, whoever, next year?
Okay, so you've lowered the bar from the initial question. When you initially posed it, it was, what can these teams, if these teams had a dream summer, can they beat the Cavs?
Okay,
the
Warriors? Well, we can do that
so
bar too.
Let's stick with that.
Okay.
Because I think the conference finals in the West would have been a lot more competitive had Kawhi been healthy. Throw in then Chris Paul and whoever they would get for in a fake LaMarcus Aldridge trade. And I would like them. I would like them to push Golden State a little bit. And Cleveland, look. If the Celtics do steal Gordon Hayward, they suddenly are really tough to guard, because
you know who's tougher to guard? Cleveland.
Well, all right, but you also have to factor in LeBron James, 15 years in.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe that he can play at like a Hall of Fame,
yeah.
like, historic. I don't even know what you say to describe what he's doing right now.
I agree. But look, we now have years of evidence. He's jogging through the first two rounds of the playoffs period, right? So this is just saying, like, let's scale back his minutes, scale back his role in those series. Like, if he knows he's, like, setting up for this titanic showdown in the Eastern Conference Finals, Ty is probably not running him out there for 44 against DeMar DeRozan in the second round, right? I just think that it's hard to make a case that these dream teams, even if they have perfect summers, are on the level with these guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a fair point.
That's scary, right? Like, if you're Adam Silver, if you're sitting there in your office, at what previous point over the last 5 years, 10 years, however long, has it been that bad?
You know what the good news is, though? Is I honestly am not that stressed as a basketball fan.
Okay.
Because there are like 8 different things about the NBA that have nothing to do with the playoffs that I absolutely love. Whether it's the draft, whether it's summer league, like there's enough stupid shit associated with this sport that keeps me like transfixed for 8 months a year that like, even if we're stuck with a bummer of a May for a couple years, I can live with it.
No, I mean, we just distract ourselves with Russell Westbrook for a solid 6 straight months.
Yeah.
Like, look, you know, his photography vest, you know, we get into the Harden thing for a few months. I mean, there's definitely enough personalities to go around, but
no, the league should be concerned. You know?
Yeah. I guess my point is that stuff carries us through the season pretty well. But like when a lot of people roll around that are like, okay, it's postseason time, let's see some good stuff. And they come back unfulfilled after 2 months. That's rough. That's
yeah. All. All right. So moving on, we've got a couple Celtics questions here. Dave says, even with the Celtics loss tonight, how excited do you think Danny Ainge is to be able to use the Ewing theory potential against Isaiah Thomas's agent after the Celtics looked 10 times better on defense and the ball movement was doing all of Isaiah's work for the C's when they play against playoff defenses? I think that's a good point. I know I just got done like feeling sorry for the Celtics for having to pay Isaiah that much money. I don't think there's any circumstance where they actually offer him that much money.
Yeah, it changed. Life came at him fast. I think we can say that for sure. I mean, the injury issue is not great for him. I think if you're Boston, though, you can't undercut what he did. I mean, they're there because of Isaiah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that it proved that it wasn't a gimmick. Like, he was so consistently good. Their offense was consistently good enough with him in that lead role that even if they strike out on their dream summer, if Hayward stays put, if they can't get Paul George, if it's just like add Markelle Fultz and we're bringing it back, he's going to command that kind of a contract from them. Maybe not the full, every last dollar of it. Maybe the outside interest won't fuel. That's kind of
my point, yeah. Is that I don't think that there's going to be as much of a market for Isaiah Thomas as I guess some people imagine.
I'm not sure I ever thought there was going to be that market. I mean, I guess people would call me an Isaiah hater because I do point out like his defense a lot.
Hold on. Because you are an Isaiah hater.
I wouldn't say that.
But yeah, I think once we get a year or two down the line, first of all, cap space is going to be more scarce.
Yep.
And there's also, I mean, there, I would say probably 10 to 15 teams around the league are set at point guard. Yep. And are not looking for.
And everybody else wants to draft one. They don't want one who's 28, 29, 30. I mean, it's kind of a Lowry type situation to me looking forward for Isaiah, because if you're significantly more valuable to your current team than to any other team. And I would say that about Lowry.
Yeah.
I would say that about Isaiah. You could even throw in somebody like George Hill to this mix or Drew Holiday. You know, like if the Pelicans lose Drew Holiday, you know, like good luck, right? But like, are people banging down Drew Holiday's door to like get a, you know, get a load of his 45 games per year? Probably not.
Yeah.
So when you're in that situation, it makes it tough on an agent. And like, if you're in that spot, you don't want to drag that negotiation out and push for every last dollar. You almost want to just take whatever they offer you. And that could keep his price down for Boston. But in terms of like Boston's big picture here, they still need Isaiah, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If they're really going to compete, I mean, it's a cute story. Oh, look, they won a game without him. Like, if they really want to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, continue to be a top team, their surest method to do that in the short term is to keep him around and keep him featured.
They definitely need Isaiah. I just think that there's been a bunch of cynics looking at them saying, all right, well, good luck once you have to pay Isaiah. And they may not have to pay him as much as people expect. But speaking of the Celtics big picture, Second question here from Shanti. He says, I'm on a plane right now flying over DC and I can feel the Olynyk hate from 10,000 feet up. As a Sixers fan, I can agree that there's no better feeling than hating a Celtics player. That said, after the lottery, whose future would you rather have? First of all, the Sixers have been asking this question for like 3 years about the Celtics. The Celtics with the number one pick, next year's Nets pick, but LeBron and the Warriors are still reigning along with their expiring contracts coming up. Or you could take the Sixers with Embiid, Simmons, the number three pick, 2018 unprotected Lakers, and 2019 unprotected Kings, plus cap space and possibly rising at the right time. What do you think? Also, he gave a shout out to your drone pictures on Instagram.
Nice. Nice. I appreciate that. It's probably like full circle if he's at 10,000 feet up while he's watching my drone pictures.
Totally.
Sorry, Sixers fans. You're never the answer. Until you can get these guys on the court for 75 games consecutively, simultaneously, until you get 75 from Simmons and 75 from Embiid in the same season, you can't claim your ceiling. I feel like we've been over this multiple times.
That is certainly the Sixers take that you've had for a year and a half.
Solid 2 years. And this is one other thing from the draft lottery that I forgot to mention on our draft lottery reaction podcast. Embiid is officially no longer allowed back at the lottery. Like, he was the college sophomore who like checked back in on his favorite math teacher and he had a good night and everybody was really excited to see him. He said hi to the girls who were sophomores when he was a senior in high school. He made the rounds. He's really funny. Everybody loved him on the internet. It was great. He's about to get his rookie extension here. Like, you can't go back having barely played the NBA and keep going back to the lottery drawing and be the representative. You just can't be that guy 5 years out. It doesn't work.
Are you really going to come out against Embiid at the lottery? You have a lot of old man takes. We're not even going to get into it. We'll talk about your Spurs awakening later in the podcast. But Embiid is welcome at every lottery ever. Nah, he was easily the best part of that.
All I'm
night.
Saying is if he shows up at Summer League again in one of his customized soccer jerseys, it's going to be, hey, cool. Are you still in the NBA?
He's
played like 30 games in 3 years, right?
Embiid does not have to play another game, and he is still welcome at every NBA event. He's just a fantastic
only by
character.
The kind of people who hang banners for Sam Hinkie. By the rest of us who live in reality.
Shots fired at alt Sixers. I have an answer to this question.
I'm kind of kidding, but I'm not really. I don't think he can go back next year. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Maybe leave it to Simmons. Hopefully he can play more than 31 games.
Yeah. Well, I still think they should trade Simmons. But so my answer to this question is that if I were a fan right now, I would definitely prefer the Celtics future because I think the Celtics know what they're doing and are smart about developing their guys and win games. And they're good at like every phase of team building. And so I'm going to, they get the benefit of the doubt on this one.
You mean they're not run by Brian Colangelo?
Well, and also half of their like cornerstones are not like perpetually injured. But I will say this, if I could run a team,
okay,
I would prefer to take over the Sixers than the Celtics because
low expectations.
Well, yeah, you're not dealing with these. They're crazy fans.
You make one trade with Vlade and you're a hero for life.
That's true. That's true. But I also think the Sixers future with or without a functional Embiid, there's just so many different picks to work with. And I think if you came in and said, look, we're going to trade Ben Simmons, get back as much as we can. Mm-hmm. I'm taking either De'Aaron Fox or Josh Jackson and just rolling from there. And we'll sort of build out the roster from there. And then look, that Lakers pick is almost certainly going to be in the lottery. Like the Kings pick.
Not almost certainly. Certainly going to be in the lottery. Yeah,
the Kings pick in 2019, another certainty as far as the lottery is concerned. The cap space, I don't know how valuable the cap space is now. But again, in 2 years, that's going to be pretty important. So,
well, here's the thing. This is one rare franchise where if we do the dream scenario that I was mentioning earlier, even if it's just the dream scenario of their current talent, they could be there in 2 or 3 years, like in the Eastern Conference Finals, making some serious noise. You can't say that about very many franchises, But we have been saying that for 2 years, still waiting to see legitimate progress on that front. And I'm higher on Ben Simmons than most people. And I think that I'm still of the mentality, like if I was running their team, you might disagree with this. If I was running their team, unlike the Lakers, where I would not draft around D'Angelo Russell, if I'm the Sixers at three, I do draft around Simmons.
Yeah, they're doing that. I just don't think he's I don't want a superstar who can't shoot, who...
But isn't Giannis your favorite player?
Well, again, like Giannis is such a freak that he clears that bar. I don't think Simmons...
I just had my first in-person podcasting moment where I didn't want to dig in real deep on this debate because I could actually look at your reactions.
I was thinking about that. Had you seen me during your Spurs rhapsodizing?
I would have stopped the first round.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Next question. From Absorb XL. This dude hit me up on Twitter with it. It was not a question for the podcast, gotcha. But it was a reaction to a mock draft that I did this week. And he says, this would shake things up. Boston receives Porzingis. New York receives Jay Crowder, Eric Bledsoe, and the fourth pick, and the Suns receive the first pick. So it's hard to do fake trades on podcasts. No,
I do like the fake trades, at least it's fun. My initial reaction to this was I don't think that Phil Jackson has the credibility to trade Porzingis.
Yeah.
I just think it gets shot down. Like the backlash... Ownership, I mean, Dolan, granted, of all the owners in the league who are going to care the least about angry fan bases, like revolting, it's Dolan who would, you know, gladly fight them out front of his building and have legends hauled out of courtside seats. I just don't think, like, if you had anyone with any kind of attachment to the reality of the situation, if you put out feelers at all to, like, get it back, I just think it's untenable to trade Porzingis at this point.
That's a good take. That is probably the correct take. And yet, Phil is playing with fire. Like, I think it was last week, he had a meeting with Porzingis' brother, who is kind of like his manager. And then like 2 days later, he fired the assistant coach that Porzingis is closest to. And there's been a lot of sort of like antagonizing going on with Phil and the Porzingis camp.
He does seem to like the people, like the hurt people that he's close to, right? Like the Melo thing seemed like it got pretty personal. It kind of continues to be personal.
Yeah, there's an ego thing with Phil. But I think I have 2 points here. One, I don't know if Porzingis should be as untouchable as he is for New York. Like if you could trade him to get Bledsoe. Well, no.
Bledsoe Crowder at number four. I think he's untouchable enough to not settle for
yes,
that.
100%. And Porzingis is great. I just, like, things have devolved to the point where it may make sense. And if Dolan's not going to fire Phil and, like, inject some sanity into the situation, which as long as Dolan's there, I don't think that's ever going to happen, then... There are way like Porzingis's value right now is sky high, and he also has had some injuries over the last 2 years.
His value
would give
me
pause.
His value should be sky high, and I think that if you're trying to make the argument that we're going to trade Porzingis because we're not sure if we can develop him and we just want a sure thing that's going to kind of get us into the bottom half of the Eastern Conference so we can save some face, which would probably be the best argument you could come up with for trading him.
Yeah.
That's a terrible argument.
They should not trade Porzingis. I apologize.
Well, what about this part of it, though? From the Phoenix's side, and, you know, granted, obviously, we kind of raced the Porzingis angle immediately, but if you're Phoenix and you can do Bledsoe and four, you know, to move up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I understand that Bledsoe's been great for them, but if the goal is to really build a foundation that carries you for the next 10 years, like Bledsoe's not going to be that guy. And it would make sense if you could steal Markel Fultz, like obviously. And
yeah, like what is their plan for Bledsoe? I mean, we've joked about how they shut him down. You know, he's got like, and they just sent him up to North Canada with the whooping cranes for the final 6 months. You know, like they let him go from November until February and then he's gone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a long-term plan, right? I mean, can you run that back again if you're them? Like, I'm not sure if you can. At some point, there's got to be resistance from him, right? Like public resistance saying, hey, I'm a professional basketball player. I'd like to play. Are they going to be that much better next year? I don't think so. You know, I mean, what's the argument? Like, unless you're really expecting, you know, their rookies from last year, like Chris and Bender to take huge leaps forward in year two. Like, why is this team going to be any better? Right. So,
well, and we can definitely
I'd trade him.
We could definitely agree that if you were to trade him, the time would be like in the next,
as soon as possible,
30 days
like right now while we're on this call.
The draft is full of point guards who would be great fits next to Devin Booker.
Well, and just like his value is going to just continue to decline, right? Like, it's not going to be Brandon Knight levels bad because he's not as bad as Brandon Knight. But like, the closer he gets to the end of his contract, the more obvious it is he turns into PJ Tucker, right? Like,
yeah.
Eric Bledsoe should get you something that's a lot better than PJ Tucker, especially if you trade him early.
Yeah. Okay. Last question while we stay in fake trade land.
Okay.
Porzingis for number one.
Woof. If I'm Boston, I'd probably do it.
I think I would do it too. Yeah. Only because big men are just a little bit harder to find.
And just positionally, I think it's just better balance. Like, you want your core guys to be balanced and like fit together positionally. Yeah. And like, if you're calling Isaiah a core guy, Horford might not be part of the core, but they got a million wings. Like, clearly they need like that foundational big man.
Well, and Porzingis is also the sort of player who could actually help them compete like right away next year.
Oh yeah,
I mean, big well, upgrade over Olynyk.
Like, if they're getting quality minutes out of Olynyk,
yeah,
Jarebko and Amir Johnson, I think that Brad Stevens is going to find a way to turn Porzingis into
and
a
then,
stud.
But then he also gives them what they would be getting with Fultz, which is sort of a guaranteed baseline of relevance until like 2025. So I would do that if I were Boston. That's probably the only trade that I would do if I were the Celtics. I mean, save like flipping him for Karl Towns.
There might be some people who say, well, you'd rather have the extra cost-controlled years on Fultz than Porzingis. But look, if you can get a player like Porzingis on a max contract, you take that and you're just paying.
Yeah, well, it's a difference of 2 years. Yeah. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And that might be the only Porzingis trade. Actually, you were right initially. No matter what, if Phil trades Porzingis, there will be riots. But moving on to your favorite team in the NBA, the San Antonio Spurs. Toby asks, where do you foresee LaMarcus Aldridge landing in the top 100 next year? Surely he's due for a slide.
Well, let me just say that a lot of times I'm the public voice, the public face, this top 100. But this is a process that Rob and I do together.
Uh-huh. This is Rob Mahoney from Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, sorry, Rob Mahoney. He doesn't check in with me that often mid-season about guys. But I heard from him a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, LaMarcus, we might need to be really taking a look at that one next year. So, yes, Toby, we're on it. We see what you're saying. He's not the same guy. And I think the most disappointing part about San Antonio's playoffs is just, and I wrote this after game two when he kind of no-showed in Golden State, he's not holding up his end of the bargain. The trade-off was less touches, less responsibility, supporting cast. We're going to save you for the postseason. Then you can reassert yourself and be that number two guy behind Kawhi. I think overall he plays pretty good defense and doesn't get enough credit for his defense. But offensively, he was easier to take out of games than DeRozan. And that's saying a lot. Like, they did not have to send that much stuff at him just to have him give up, pass the ball out. He didn't, after game one especially, he didn't have that extra gear of like, I'm going across the paint to get contact, get to the free throw line consistently. He didn't necessarily trust his shot. Long story short, he's not what San Antonio signed up for. Right, he's not holding up his end of the bargain. And I think there's a decent chance they look to move him this summer. In terms of the bigger name guys, I think he should be considered to be on the trade block because of that. I could also see them saying, look, we'll just roll it back and win 60 games again. It will be awesome. I could see that. It's a very San Antonio move to do that. They don't panic trade. They're going to want to get value for him. But, you know, in terms of where he's going to fall in the top 100, I mean, he's clearly no longer now capable of being a number one guy situationally. Like, if you traded him to a crap team, is he going to be this alpha scorer like he was in Portland a few years ago? No.
Yes.
So that's going to take him most likely, and I hate to prejudge this, it's going to take him most likely outside the top 30, maybe outside the top 40.
I love that you talk about how seriously you talk about the top 100.
Well, look, if we're going to get blasted for 6 months by an entire country in Canada
yes.
for where we're ranking these guys, we have to put a lot of time and thought
fair
into
enough,
it.
Fair enough, fair enough. And for the record, I blasted you about LaMarcus Aldridge the first day it was published. I will say this, though. I think LaMarcus has kind of gotten a raw deal from the way people are talking about him. He was not ever brought in. Like you said, he was not brought in as the number one option.
But he was capable of that. And part of the reason why we had him so high on our list was because we try to strip out the context, right? We're not saying, does he play with Kawhi or not play with Kawhi? We're just saying, look, if you're on a random team, can you throw that guy out there and have a really good offense with him as the main guy? As Lillard was getting up to speed in Portland, that was absolutely true of Aldridge. He had some beastly years where they were throwing a lot on his shoulders. That guy is gone. That's right. My point. And that's why I'm disappointed in him. You know, and I've been this like big time LaMarcus backer for years.
Well, okay.
Hoping that I was going to have some of that paid off.
I think people were being unrealistic about it. You know, like there are a lot of takes who said, all right, Kawhi went down. It's time for LaMarcus to carry them. And like he hasn't been that guy at any point in San Antonio. And The Spurs were screwed the second they lost their number one guy. And you can't just like suddenly ask him to play a completely different role and come through.
But there is a middle ground there where he could have definitely done more.
Yeah.
Like, and it was weird too, because like when he came out for game four, he goes in the layup line, no high fives or anything with any of his teammates, just kind of doing his thing. And it's like, it's not just about the basketball stepping up. You know, it's like Kawhi goes down, you're the vet. You're the guy who has all-stars, all-NBAs on your roster, right? Rally the guys around you, like, step forward, you know, get out in front of the microphones and be like, we still got a shot, you know, like be that leader guy.
But you're playing the Death Star. Like, they were never going to win.
I agree. But he could have played better. We can agree on that.
He definitely could have played better. Okay. I do feel bad. I feel bad for the Spurs because they brought him in to play a very specific role against the Warriors. I'm convinced that they signed him specifically as a foil to what the Warriors do. And that was to be a secondary guy who could give Draymond problems way down low. And I don't think the Spurs ever looked at him as a first option. So
no, they didn't. There's no way they did.
Yeah. So anyways, I'd chill out on the LaMarcus hate.
The other thing I would say about his top 100 ranking here real quick too, is that what we're finding with bigs is rim protection and three-point shooting.
Like
those are the things that are becoming more and more important every single year. The more everybody else goes small, those are the things that are in demand. If you're LaMarcus and you're not this A-plus rim protector, you don't really like to play center full-time, and you can't shoot three-pointers, or you just choose not to, those are now bigger strikes in the top 100 of 2018 than they were in the top 100 of 2015 or 16.
The criteria is changing. All right, Renzo asks.
We ebb and flow with the game.
Yeah, I know, of course. Renzo asks, what is the missing piece that Washington needs for there to be a Wizards party next year in the playoffs?
Probably a bench, right?
There are like 4 to 5 missing pieces on the bench. I will say is that I'm still recovering. Like, I was on the beach today, and it was really restorative. I got a churro on the boardwalk. It was great. Just I'm treating myself out here, and
wellness is really important.
Exactly. So I feel like this trip has been a step in my recovery from the Wizards playoff flameout. And at some point, I am going to shift all of my energy to getting DeMarcus Cousins to DC.
No, you don't want
to do that. Yes. No, I do. And I've also talked to several, I've talked to at least 3 people in the NBA who are like, you do not want that dude on your team. And I do want that dude on my team.
Here's the argument for it. And it's like a subheading of the Pelicans argument for it, which was like, if we don't have to give up that much.
Exactly.
We'll just take it for cheap and roll the dice.
Sign and trade Otto to New Orleans.
His value is only going down. Like, it's not, I don't see any, do you foresee any way next year, like by next year's trade deadline, that his value has recovered, right?
It certainly has cratered.
So I think it can go lower. And so like, there could be just some like crazy scenario where like you're, you know, Dell Demps, he finds himself in that Rob Hennigan mode, right? Where it's like, look, my big trade didn't work out. I'm at the deadline. I got to do something to save face because we're not going to be able to get this guy back.
I don't know. I don't know if Dell Demps is going to save any more face. I think that ship might have sailed.
He's just been on the hot seat for a long time. And I think everybody rallied around, and myself included, rallied around Orlando as like the team that had to fire its GM this year. And they got the message. That momentum is going to definitely either rally. It's either going to be McDonough, and McDonough's still got Booker to kind of like ride the gravy train on Devin Booker. It's going to be him. Or is it going to be Dell Demps next year?
Dell Demps is at the point, you remember in Goodfellas, where the guy has to burn down the restaurant? I think that's Dell Demps in New Orleans.
So that is prime buying territory. Like if you're Washington and you really want to talk yourself into John Wall being the guy who can keep DeMarcus straight, sure. I also like this idea of how many times do you think Cousins can trade teams where he lines up with one of his former Kentucky buddies, where you can still sell the story that that guy is going to be the reason why his career is going to turn around?
You know what?
Because like, we're on number one with Anthony Davis. John Wall could easily be number two. Bledsoe, God knows where that's going to happen.
And the Wall and Boogie thing could really break bad because there will be like a lot of hype coming in and it could get kind of dark if it doesn't work out because those dudes are actually best friends.
So do you think we could push that for three or four rounds, or is it going to be like, if it doesn't work with Wall, is that going to be the cutoff? Or like, there's no former Kentucky guy can save him.
I would say most serious basketball people have already given up on Boogie. Yeah. I am not one of them. And the reason, just to like...
Serious or you haven't given up?
A little bit of both. My serious rationale for the Boogie move would be that, look, if you're not going to have a functional bench, you need three legit superstars. And that was the problem with the Wizards. They had two guys who had to play A-plus in every game they were going to win. And that is not sustainable. But if you add Boogie, they become a lot harder to deal with.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a very similar thing to what New Orleans was talking itself into, which is we're never going to be able to find another star.
Yeah.
This is our only shot. And I think Washington, if you have max money on the books for Otto, Beal, and Wall,
yeah,
you're not going to have another shot at a star. Like, you're not going to be able to put together some combo of your other assets to get anybody like Jimmy Butler or Paul George. So if you really are serious about keeping up with the kind of the top level arms race, you're going to have to compromise on something, and compromising on personality and character or whatever you want to call it.
You're going to have to compromise on a lot of things with Boogie.
But yeah, like that's your argument. And honestly, if it happened, I would say go for it, Washington. Yeah. I wouldn't even hate it. I just, especially because I think the price would be pretty low.
Yeah. Next question. Sticking with GMs, Thomas says, why didn't the Bucks match the offer or extend John Hammond? Is this the Jason Kidd, Jeff Schwartz power play we've been waiting for since Kidd was hired?
Yeah, well, Jason Kidd's got that kind of glassy eye look to him. Have you ever talked to Jason Kidd?
No.
Well, I just remember like years back in the locker room one time, I went over to ask Jason Kidd a question about Jarrett Jack because he was kind of like the young up-and-coming Blazers point guard. And Jason Kidd, his eyes glassed over so fast when I started asking about Jarrett Jack, and he went to the most generic possible. He basically was like, yeah, he's a point guard. Like, that was the gist of his answer. Like, no compliment. Like, but it was very clear that he did not care about the interaction. And it was just sort of like, yeah, like, I'm a pro. I'm going through this because I have to do this, but I'm giving you nothing. And there was very ungenuine. My point is, I can definitely see John Hammond getting this big offer, like kind of walking around the Bucks office, like, hey guys, I got this offer. And Jason Kidd kind of walking in with his glass eyes saying, John, that's great. I'm so happy for you. That's a good offer. Thanks. And then, you know, talking to ownership and be like, we're fine without him. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. That I could see that. I think Kidd, man, he's the one reason I am skeptical of the Bucks every season.
Yeah.
Like, I think he might be a good, there are a lot of people who say that coaching is much more intricate than the mainstream realizes. And I don't know if that's necessarily true with Jason Kidd. I think a lot of what he's done in Milwaukee is just sort of throwing ideas at the wall.
Well, I'd also say like a lot of his assistants, like they get talked up.
Yeah.
So that could also be one of those things too, where, you know, sometimes if you're just a personality coach and you've got X and O guys around you and you've got young talent, a guy like Giannis, who's going to carry a team to 50 wins every year, pretty much here going forward. That's my expectation for him anyways. That can let you get away with a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, look what LeBron's doing for Ty Lue. Ty Lue said the Celtics are tougher to guard than Golden State. So, I mean, like.
Exactly. Exactly. Two more thoughts on the Bucks. Number one, I have no idea what the Hammond situation was, because they also, like, now they have announced this national search for a GM.
Yeah.
Which, so I don't think it's going to be Kidd. I don't think it's going to be Jeff Schwartz. But they've announced this national search, even though they've had Justin Zanuck sort of in waiting there for 2 years, which I think is part of the reason that Hammond sort of saw the writing on the wall and was like, I'm going to go find some more job security.
Yeah.
But who knows what they're going to end up doing. And the other thing I wanted to say I'm team John Hammond for life. Because okay. One time at Grantland, I wrote a story about Eric Bledsoe. Okay. And I said, I basically encouraged everyone who read the piece to carpet bomb the Bucks with requests to trade for Eric Bledsoe. And because I really wanted Bledsoe on the Bucks with Giannis and Jabari. And my campaign worked. And then John Hammond, like 3 hours after it published, got my number and called me. And we had a like, we had a good like 10 or 15 minute talk about the Bucks. And
he was like, so please, like, you can call off the dog.
Was that what he was going I think for? That was what it was, but he was very cool. So shout out to John Hammond. Good luck in Orlando. You have a lot of work ahead of you with that shit pile of a roster.
Well, I think that's just, I mean, like, if you're an executive, though, you know, you come in getting a situation that has zero expectations.
It is, yeah, no, he's in a good spot. Over,
and you got a fine coach there in Vogel and good draft pick. You know, you nail this draft pick and that guy comes out as a rookie and it looks good.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing turns around real quick in terms of perception. And, you know, as an executive, that bolsters your reputation. So, you know, as bad of a landing spot as that is for an actually like for a draft pick, like we're always kind of laughing like, God, I really hope that, you know, like if you're Lonzo Ball, you don't want to get drafted to Orlando, Phoenix or Sacramento, right? Like if you're a GM, you've already kind of proven yourself. Those are kind of the best jobs because you're going to have 3 or 4 years to do whatever you want to do. You're going to have the flexibility to institute your vision, and you can do anything. And people are going to be like, "Well, it can be worse than the last guy." I mean, Hennigan
that's
was,
true.
Hennigan was a bum.
The
right?
bar is really, really so, low.
Like, people do kind of forget that sometimes. There's more to do in those situations if you're an executive. It's a more stimulating job than Milwaukee right now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, good luck to him. I that's a good point. It is definitely a win for him to be down there.
Also, there's a lot of people from the Midwest that go down to Florida at that age of their life.
Yeah. Worst case scenario, you can just relax.
Get an RV.
All right, next question. Warren asks, if Sharp is to be believed, the Lakers should be taking Fox at number 2 as his strengths help play to the weaknesses of some of the other Lakers on the roster. But almost every mock has Lonzo at number 2. My question, which of those two prospects has the best chance of overcoming their main flaws? Fox's spotty shooting and Ball's lax defense. So my answer to this, as the draft nerd on this podcast, part of the reason I think the Lakers should take Fox is because Fox is the better player. It's not just about the weaknesses. It's not just about fitting with the roster they have. I do think that Fox and D'Angelo would be fun together. And I also, I don't think Ball's weaknesses are limited to his defense. I don't really trust his jump shot. I don't trust his ability to get open in the NBA. And I don't want to sound totally anti-Lonzo because wherever he lands, I'm going to be really excited to watch him. I think whether it's in Philly or Sacramento, or I think LA would be just too much of a scene. Like, I don't know. It would just be kind of a mess. And but I think he can succeed. I don't think he's going to be that like Jason Kidd, Magic Johnson level guy that he's been sold as. Whereas Fox, he only needs to be like a Tony Parker level shooter to really, really give teams trouble.
Can you flip this for me for a second and explain to me this part about why everyone has him at number 2? Like that's a given. Like, because I don't think he's his home run player either necessarily.
Yeah.
I think he's good. I think if you stripped away all of the hype and you only watched that 1 year, and you took into account like some of the defensive questions, the shot mechanics questions.
Well, now you're asking me to delve into the world of why mock drafts. Like,
yeah, well, if it's a mock draft thing, I'd like to know that. Or if it's just a player evaluation thing, like this is what people are saying he's unbelievable at. Like, is he a better passer than Ben Simmons?
First of all, yes, probably.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, no, he's a really good passer, especially in transition. Okay. I think in the half court, he's going to have trouble against NBA athletes, which you saw in those Kentucky games where, and I don't want to read those games as like definitive statements on Fox versus Lonzo, But it
it's
was
better evidence than playing some random pack.
Exactly. Like, that's the closest you can get to seeing what he can do against NBA athletes. I can only say that I kept him at number two in the mock because in the most recent one I did, because I didn't want to come off as like Captain Hot Take, like we're out for clicks.
Yeah.
And the consensus right now is that he'll end up there. But I know that like there's not a consensus about him being the second best player.
Well, here's a piece of life advice.
Uh-huh.
Follow your soul. Okay. Like, you clearly don't think he should be number two. I think you owe it to the listeners and the readers and everyone to not be concerned about
hold up, hot take accusations.
I want you to go out there.
If I were speaking for me, I wrote it last week. I wrote about how the Lakers should take Fox.
Oh, so are you saying, though, that everyone has the consensus of Lonzo at two because it's the Lakers?
Yeah, and because that's where we are right now. I think in a couple of weeks it might start to shift a little bit.
Gotcha.
But on behalf, when I'm writing on behalf of Sports Illustrated, because people quote that and be like, this is Sports Illustrated has player X here.
Yeah.
I just kept Lonzo there. It's for now. We'll see. We'll see where it all shakes out. Joe asks, is it wrong for me to be a Spurs fan in Connecticut? This was from last week. And the answer is no. The world's biggest Spurs fan is right here in Southern California. You're all set. Another Spurs question. Austin says, it seems like Gordon Hayward's free agency narrative is that he's choosing between Boston and Utah. But have we all ruled out the Spurs too quickly? What do you think?
It would be a great fit. I mean, I think his comfort with the ball, but not overly dominant. His ability to create shots, but clearly be a second guy, not a first guy. His ability to play both ends. His ability to play multiple positions defensively. Him and Kawhi, that's a nasty combo. I mean, I really like it. Some of these things, though, you know, these rumors, they're coming from people who know these guys pretty carefully, right? Like, to me, it's a red flag. If San Antonio is never mentioned as a possible destination for him in months, and they have significant legwork to, like, create opportunity to go get him and give him a big contract offer. So it's not like they can just take Chris Paul and plug him on their team, right?
Yeah.
Same thing for Hayward. Then we should probably go with that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how often do we really see people come out of absolute nowhere to strike on, like, the biggest free agent of the year, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Every single report has had it Boston and Utah. I think he's going to Boston. It would be, I do want Kawhi to get help somehow.
One of the more awkward moments in my life in the past month was when I was on the radio in Utah and they said, well, if you were Gordon Hayward, what would you do? And I was like, I was like, I'm gone to Boston in a heartbeat.
That's tough.
And I couched it like five different ways, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't quite play the, like, you know, I've been to all five national parks in Utah card. But
yeah.
Like, I was headed down that route.
Listen, man, I really like Utah.
Like, I was trying to go there. But, I mean, it's a compelling offer.
Yeah.
And, like, if the money is not that different and you actually have a legit chance of being in the conference finals, or you're looking up at the Warriors and, you know, lucky to make the second round. I mean, they got fortunate to make the second round this year. It's going to be not a slam dunk they make the second round next year. I don't know. I mean, that's, I think I would probably go to Boston in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. All right. A couple more questions here. Not going to do like a full podium segment. I will say one thing that was awesome is like 2 weeks ago, we asked for 5-star reviews.
We did.
We were at like 160 and our goal was 200 before the finals.
Okay.
And I checked before we recorded this. We are at 202.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, man. Whoa. So people came through. So thank you to everyone for listening and reviewing and subscribing. Tell your friends.
You know what's pretty funny, though? I made the mistake of shouting out the guy who gave me the pity comment for the pity follow on Instagram.
Yeah.
I've gotten like seven more pity comments. People are just loving saying pity comment to all my pictures. I'm putting up these gorgeous shots. And all I'm getting is like a few people who I know from like high school being like, beautiful picture. And then everyone else is just pity comment.
That's a compliment, though. That means that they're listening.
Hey, so we love the engagement, guys. Hey, it's openfloormail@gmail.com. openfloormail@gmail.com. We appreciate all the emails. We also appreciate the 5-star reviews. I'm blown away that that many people just did it. Yeah, I really appreciate it. That's cool.
I did not intend to turn this into like a commercial for the podcast, but you know. I did.
ADT.
Yeah. All right. One more thing on your Instagram.
Okay.
I was dead serious about not posting snake photos.
Oh, my bad.
There's nothing I fear more than snakes. And I was super out on Mitch McGarry a couple years ago when the first thing he did as a rookie was buy a snake. Another big fan of snakes, Ben Simmons.
You know, when I was out on Mitch McGarry, you went to Venice Beach today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was at a high school basketball tournament on Venice Beach. Mitch McGarry somehow breaks a backboard during pregame warmups and cuts up his hand and his back so badly he can't perform in the game. Even though he was going to Michigan, my school, I was out at that moment. You just can't trust the decision making. It's like on the beach, nationally televised game that's delayed because McGarry puts his hand through the backboard.
Another tremendous old man take from you. Godfrey asks, speaking of high school basketball, Godfrey says, I'm wondering if you think it's a good time to be a Nets fan now. Short answer, no.
Nope.
He's been a Nets fan since the 1991 season, Kenny Anderson's rookie year. And he says, since no one is catching the Warriors and Cavs anytime soon, the Celtics have all of our picks, it would make sense to be horrible now and aim for a peak in 2023 or something, right? It's amazing that this is like the life of a Nets fan. I'm so sorry, Godfrey. He also says, living in Hoboken, the way I deal with being a Nets fan is following the top high school players in New Jersey and watching them play. There are these two sophomores, Scotty Lewis and Brian Antoine, who are teammates at a school called Ranny, that are ESPN's number 13 and 14 sophomores in the country. I imagine them as future Nets. Look,
go for it. I mean, I've heard my share of delusional comments. Most of them are actually from Philly. And maybe there's like a South Philly angle here or a South Jersey angle, Philly angle, not from this guy, but maybe there's, you know, kind of contaminates in the water through there where you just start dreaming about 5 years into the future and you completely throw out any relation to your current setup. This is the furthest I've ever heard anyone go because it's 2017, right? He's hoping for a peak in 2023, which there's no possible way they're going to peak in 6 years because they don't have their pick next year, right? So that would be year five for that guy.
Yeah.
So really what he's hoping for is maybe when he says peak in 2023, he's hoping for decent by 2026.
No, no, no. 2023 is realistic for them. I don't know. Look, they're going to have... At some point, they're going to have draft picks. Answer this
question. Do they have a single player on their current roster who will still be on their roster in 2023? If the answer is going to be Jeremy Lin, then we're done.
I'm a big Rondae Hollis-Jefferson guy.
Okay.
So maybe one.
So he'll be on a max rookie extension because they'll have to completely overpay him to keep him.
Yeah. Well, all right. We're not going to go into the Nets future. Before people turn off the podcast, I will just say that we get at least one Nets email every week, and it's always kind of vague. Like, can you talk about the Nets? Like, what do you think of the Nets? I want to thank Godfrey for giving us like a vivid window into just how dark Nets fandom has gotten, because I can't imagine watching high school sophomores as my ray of hope.
You know, there's those short stories where like the people are in the insane asylums and they're locked in the room for year after year after year. And so the story narrator just becomes that person's imagination and they start seeing things and like, here's the wallpapers talking to them sometimes, you know. I think that's Godfrey. I think Godfrey's got the yellow wallpaper in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Just A+. My favorite email we got this week. All right. Dennis says, Sharp, I'm going to need you to stop saying it is what it is every 5 minutes. I've been listening all season. Not sure when it started, but I need it to end. Quick. I think that only happened last week. And I was not in top form on that podcast.
Look, it did not only happen last week. You do it all the time. But to bail you out here, I have a terrible habit of saying, first of all,
yes.
Second of all, I list everything in numerical order. So now, Dennis, you can complain about both Sharp's It Is What It Is is and my listing of numbers.
Listening back to podcasts is a good way to
hate yourself.
Yeah. Self-loathing. See, he also adds, related, what is your least favorite cliche phrase, both in normal conversation and in the way we talk about basketball? Do you have an answer there?
When people say I could care less, it's nails on the chalkboard, because it's I could not care less. So if you screw that up. Also, another one that drives me crazy is all of the sudden instead of all of a sudden.
Really?
Yeah, that one really gets me too.
Okay.
So those two, both of those, anytime I hear them, it's like goosebumps in a bad way, bad goosebumps, whatever you call those.
Yeah, I don't have a least favorite. I didn't come prepared with a least favorite cliche or phrase. I will say this. I really wish that more people used both teams played hard, my man, because I feel like there's never an instance where that phrase is used after a basketball game and I don't crack up and remember why I love basketball. So, bring back that cliche or phrase. And, next question here.
I will say though, like for basketball cliches, having sat through every single podium press conference from this entire playoffs and probably the last 2 or 3 years worth of podium press conferences, I hate all cliches equally, because there's only about 15 that get used in variations. And you're always hoping for the one nugget, you know, LeBron sniping at that reporter from Cleveland. You only show up when we lose. Like, you're just waiting for hours to get that one little 12-second clip that can actually be used. And otherwise, it's very monotonous. So,
okay.
I've got a lot. Speaking a deep of, well.
You know what's a cliche?
What's that?
When people on Twitter complain about reporters asking the talk about questions.
Yes.
It doesn't bother me that much. It's not that much of a crime against the profession when you're sitting there and you need a quote. It's just sort of efficient to be like, look, Brad Stevens, you know what this game is. I know what this game is. Just talk about Jay Crowder in the third quarter.
Yeah.
That's fine to me. And people need to chill.
Yeah. This is one of those situations where the backlash to the backlash is always worse. Yeah. I get far more annoyed by people freaking out over that. I mean, there are some that are especially bad, I would say, some of those talkabouts. But in general, I don't think it's the worst thing ever. And also, I think it's very easy to be at home and criticize the media, just as it's easy to criticize coaches. Go do it.
A lot of crusaders for journalism. Just take it down a notch. Little Bay, two... finish out here with three quick questions regarding your Spurs awakening. Little Bay says, do you know the word for someone who goes somewhere and suddenly he becomes this place's ambassador, spreading the word to the whole of America? Ben Wagoner. And then Yago says, the send-off for Manu was touching. As an Argentine-American, I can testify that Argentina fans traveling the globe to passionately support their own with song is totally normal. Manu is like a soccer hero to them. Nice, impassioned start to the pod.
Thank you.
I want to add, the best part of my time at the Rio Olympics was following Argentina fans. Whether it was with, they were there for Del Potro at the tennis final. And, you know, tennis is pretty stuck up.
Yeah.
And the Argentina fans were not having it. The whole, like, quiet down thing was not effective with the Argentina people there. And
Hush doesn't translate.
No. And then the basketball with the Argentina fans. I mean, I was there for Argentina-Brazil. And those guys just went nuts. And it was the best part of the Olympics. And also, I was not the one person I was not subtweeting with the Manu love and my subsequent cynicism. Zach Lowe's Manu piece in the middle of the Olympics was awesome. It was one of my favorite things I read that summer. That said, things got out of hand the other night when Manu was suddenly a top 20 player of all time.
I never said that. I thought what I said properly encapsulated a very memorable moment in NBA history. I don't want to hear the backlash.
You were great.
In terms of...
You were filled with a fire.
What's funny, though, about the whole thing, and this guy, you know, the bandwagoner thing, is that this had already happened to me twice previously.
Uh-huh.
The 2013 run and the 2014 run. I fully became indoctrinated, immersed in Spurs culture. It was just that three-year layoff without going back down there. It all came rushing back simultaneously. And it's really a shame about Kawhi.
It really is. It really is. Last question while we're out here. So John says, hey, Ben, just wanted to say I loved the whooping crane to Spurs transition on the last pod. I'm a birder in the lower Rio Grande Valley, which is about 4 hours south of San Antonio and home to some great birding. If you want to see plain chakalaka and some other South Texas specialty birds, this is the place. Hope you manage to get out and see the crane sometime. I just want to add something real quick.
Well, I want to just say it's great that we've gone from mispronouncing Eastern European basketball players' names to birds.
This yes. I think it was chakalaka. I don't know. All I want to say is that you, after we recorded that pod, you sent me an inspirational quote about the whooping crane.
I did.
From Aldo Leopold, who says, whooping cranes, a rare splendor. When we hear this call, we hear no mere bird. He is the symbol of our untamable past.
Wouldn't you say that rare splendor is one of the first phrases that comes to mind when you think about Manu Ginobili?
That's actually dead on, dead on.
Thank you. I'm dropping the mic here. No. We're sharing the mic today, and I just dropped it on my hardwood floor.
Yeah, yeah, it really, our untamable. Well, look, we have a new mascot for the podcast, number one.
Beautiful.
The whooping crane. Second of all, last question from John. He said, I'm curious if you keep a life list. This is regarding birding. He says, given that you must travel for the NBA, you could have a pretty solid one.
This is funny because he's clearly recruiting me. Like, yes. This is the opening salvo in a complete birding indoctrination. He senses my interest and he's trying to brainwash me. It kind of reminds me of when you were talking about David Robinson last week. You're just kind of like feeling it out if you want to be a part of the Spurs cult or not. So I think there's some similarities here. To answer the question, I don't have a life list. I should probably get one. I do track every national park that I go to.
Yeah.
I do try to track most of the parks that I go to around the country, but I'm not always looking for birds. Sometimes it's just views and hikes. Sometimes the birds are just there, you know?
Can I also add that you do have a life bucket list? Your goal is to visit all 50 states.
Yes, and I've made it over half of the states, probably closer to 30 or maybe 35. So yes, I do have travel goals.
That's what I learned tonight. My visit live and in person with Ben. I did not know that before, but I wish you luck on your trek across country.
You want to casually bring up my magnet collection in conversation so I can brag about that?
We're right next to a board with magnets from every state that you have visited. It's amazing. I don't ever want to leave your apartment, but we do have to go soon.
As I told Andrew when he came in, every magnet has a story.
Yes.
And we got a Hillary Clinton magnet over there.
That's
kind of a
dark story.
Yeah, it's a depressing one. It's right up there with the yellow wallpaper and the Nets. We got...
What's the spaceman? This is great radio. We're cutting it. We're cutting the pod.
The spaceman is probably Houston.
Okay.
With the NASA angle.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we'll be back next week with a less nonsensical NBA Finals preview. Thank you for listening, Ben. Thank you for hosting me tonight. And we'll be back next week.
It was my pleasure. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Keep those questions coming. Like he said, Finals preview early next week. We'll dig into the nitty gritty of the three match, Cleveland versus Golden State.
Are we going to call it the three match?
I've been calling it the three match since the two match.
Great.
We're going to continue to try to make that a thing. And 5-star reviews on iTunes. Nice to see you wearing your Mac Weldon here, by the way.
Take it easy.
Bye.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.